It's half past eight.
It's half past eight Boston time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike puts on a coast-to-coast party with four encyclopedic brains supplying the floor show. You provide the questions and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is muffed, you get the Junior Britannica, plus a $50 war bond, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information, Please. And now, light up a Lucky Strike as I present our Master of Ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Ladies and gentlemen, we feel that tonight is a very special occasion. This broadcast is coming to you from Symphony Hall in Boston, Massachusetts. Each person here in this audience, in this packed hall, has bought an admission bond in denominations ranging from $50 to $5,000. And that means that the citizens of Boston, in accordance with their tradition of magnificent patriotism, have tonight invested in our national war effort to the tune of $4,036,000. And now tonight, Information Please, unrehearsed as usual, presents its three veterans, John Kieran, Oscar Levant, and Franklin P. Adams, and as its guest of honor, one of Massachusetts' most distinguished sons, Senator Henry Cabot Lodge, Jr. But, ladies and gentlemen, before we proceed with our little show, I'd like to introduce a surprise guest who has a brief message for all of us. The Honorable Leverett Saltonstall, Governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
It is a great pleasure for me to welcome Information Please to Boston and Massachusetts. Later on, other cities, I understand, will have the opportunity of acting as their host. But we take special satisfaction in being the first to greet Mr. Adams, Mr. Levant, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Fadiman, and the producer of Information Please, Mr. Dan Golenpaul. He has arranged this bond-selling tour for the Treasury Department. We are cooperating eagerly here in Boston. No grief of our own or anything else can be permitted to check the progress of our war effort. It is in this spirit that we welcome Information Please and bid them and ourselves carry on.
Thank you, Governor Saltonstall. And now for our first question. We're going to begin, appropriately enough, with a question from Cambridge, Massachusetts, from Mr. Harry B. Wisman, and it is about Boston. These Bostonians, or neighbors of Boston, went to distant places with varying results. Identify them if you can. The first was a man who came from Quincy. He was a Quincy man who went to Moscow and witnessed a foreign invasion. Who was that? Mr. Levant.
John Reed.
Pardon?
Is it John Reed?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, I'm wrong.
It's happened before. Mr. Adams?
Might be Joseph B. Kennedy.
It might be, but I don't think it is. I don't think that Joe Kennedy was a Quincy man. Though doubtless Quincy would have been proud
to
have
him. Did you say he went to Moscow?
Pardon?
Went to Moscow.
Went to Moscow. Well, it was John Quincy Adams, United States Minister to Russia in 1809. He was there during Napoleon's invasion. Mr. Lodge, did you know of that?
Now that you mention it.
It comes back to you. Well, that often happens on this program. Very educational. Well, we got one wrong. Now we have to get the next two right. Now, this is a Boston boy who went to New Orleans and lost his crown. Mr. Levant.
John Sullivan.
John L. Sullivan, yes. Right. Whom did he lose it to?
At the moment, Errol Flynn. To Gentleman Jim Corbett.
Yes. What year?
What year?
1892.
1892, Mr. Adams is quite right. That's very good. Now, here is a Boston man who helped put Waukegan on the map. Mr. Kieran.
Mr. Sullivan, better known as Fred Allen.
Yes, is that his real name, Fred Allen?
Sure.
Oh, no.
Sullivan.
Mr.
Not
Adams?
Waukegan, Illinois. That was Jack Benny.
Well, he keeps kidding, Jack Benny.
Why, sure. If it hadn't been for Fred Allen, where would Jack Benny be now?
In Waukegan, Illinois.
Yes, in Waukegan, Illinois. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3.
Mr. Allen is from Somerville.
And now we know something about 3 distinguished Bostonians. And we go on to a question from George Dottridge of Toronto, Canada. I'm going to read 4 lines of poetry all together. I'm going to ask you to identify each of them. They come from different sources. Here are the 4 lines. She walks in beauty like the night among Arabian sands, when first she gleamed upon my sight with large and sinewy hands. Now let's get them one by one. Mr. Kieran, you want to start us off?
Well, I'll give that to Oscar. Go ahead.
I learned that in John's book. It's by Byron.
What one?
Well, I learned it only in his book last week.
Yes,
I can't remember the name.
What line?
John Byron. And it isn't even John. What's his name? Alfred Byron.
She walks in beauty like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that bright best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes.
That's right.
To Helen.
Very good. Now, how about the next line? Do you remember the next one? Among Arabian Sands. What's that from?
That I do not
know. Indian love lyrics?
No, now you're just guessing.
Well, I always guess.
Now, that's from Wordsworth's The Solitary Reaper. No nightingale did ever chant more welcome notes to weary bands of travelers in some shady haunt among Arabian sands. Is that in your book, Mr. Kieran?
No, ma'am.
Put it in. How about this? When first she gleamed upon my sight, Mr. Adams.
She was a vision of delight.
She was a
when
what?
When first she gleamed upon my sight.
What did you say she was?
A vision of delight.
No, not vision.
Phantom of
phantom,
delight.
Phantom, yes. Phantom of delight. And that's from what poet?
Wordsworth.
Wordsworth. And how about the last one with large and sinewy hands? Mr. Kieran?
The Village Blacksmith by Henry W. Longfellow.
Yes, that's right. Well, we got 3 out of 4.
Concord, Mass.
Now, how about this one from Miss Lester Harrison of New York City?
Cambridge, Mass.
What musical instrument, gentlemen, is satirized or imitated in each of the following musical excerpts that you're now going to listen to? Let's have the first. Yes, Mr. Levant.
A little fast, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. It's the Beethoven Eighth, the second movement.
And what musical instrument is being imitated?
Listen to the song of the metronome. The metronome.
Yes. Well, I suppose the metronome isn't really a musical instrument.
Yes,
but
it is.
Is it a musical instrument?
If you're tone deaf, it is.
You're talking to me?
No.
That's quite right, the metronome. And how about the second excerpt? Well, I have several hands. Mr. Lodge.
The music box.
Yes, a musical snuff box. That's quite right. And can you identify the composition itself, Mr. Lodge?
Isn't the Count Duffman, is it?
I beg your pardon?
Isn't the Count Duffman?
No, not that I know of. Mr. Levant?
Liotoff, the music box.
Yes, musical snuff box
by Liotoff. I used to dance ballet to it.
And now the third and last of these. Mr. Lodge.
Merry-go-round broke down.
Yes, you're very good at this, huh? There's always something you can rise to when you're finished with the Senate, Mr. Lodge. We did very well on that. That's 3 out of 3. And now a question from Mrs. Frances Waltis of Beneld, Illinois. Well, now here's a question that's very much to the point tonight. It's about war savings, bonds, or stamps. As you know, we're supposed to invest 10% of our income in war savings bonds. Assuming that the following are all 10%ers, identify these federal employees according to their purchases of war savings bonds or stamps. Now, this one would invest $7,500 a year. Who is that? Mr. Lodge?
President of the United States.
Yes. Whose salary? You can figure it out.
$75,000.
He's taking a cut of $9,000.
Yes, he is taking a cut in accordance with the new Byrne stabilization. Is it a law yet, Mr. Lodge?
Is what?
Is that a law yet, the burn stabilization regulation?
It's effective.
It's effective, but not a law.
It's not a law, but you'll get pinched if you don't observe it.
Now, gentlemen, this federal employee would patriotically devote $1,000 a year to war savings bonds. Mr. Lodge, who would that be?
A member of the Senate or the House, among others.
Yes, gets how much a year?
$10,000.
Well, this is your chance to squawk now, Mr. Lodge.
Some people think it's too much.
$10,000 a year, correct. And finally, one who invested 10 cents a year would be Mr. Kieran?
A dollar a year man.
Yes, quite right. Now, how about this?
There aren't any dollar a year men anymore.
Aren't there? I thought there were.
Yes, there are.
There are?
Oh, I think there are.
All right.
There are some, of course, that are making a good deal more, but that merely represents what they should get. Here's one from Mrs. E. Sarenson of New York City. This is about coffee rationing. Can you give us four expressions or phrases that refer in some way to coffee, just to keep coffee on our minds, Mr. Kieran?
You're the cream in my coffee.
Good enough. Mr. Adams.
Let's have another cup of coffee.
Well, I meant some popular phrases that don't use the word coffee, though that's perfectly all right. Mr. Levant?
I'll dedicate mine to Mayor LaGuardia. We're tenting on the old grounds tonight.
Where did you drag that one up from, Oscar? See, we can't get one or two more. That's a very good one. Mr. Adams.
I like coffee and I like tea and I like the girls and the girls like me.
Yes, you make it sound rather unconvincing somehow.
You're a...
Like coffee and I don't like tea.
I want to get off the word coffee.
You're a drip.
Oscar, if I'm a drip, that humor is dated. Mm-hmm. And now Mr. Cross will tell us that when tobacco experts describe fine tobacco, they get right to the point.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. The tobacco expert's highest word of praise for a leaf is that it will make a good smoke. For these experts know that mildness, better taste, smoking enjoyment are what count. Yes, they know tobacco from A to Z. And they know how it will smoke. That's why the overwhelming preference of independent tobacco experts for Lucky's means so much to you. The experts, present at auctions all over the South, naturally see who buys what tobacco. And year after year, they can't help but see the makers of Lucky's select the riper, lighter, milder Lucky Strike leaf. No wonder that with independent experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1. Smokers, to put it in a nutshell, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Mr. Cross, your 60-second summary of the facts tells a story worth remembering and worth acting on. And now a question from Betty Jane Kennedy of Sherman Oaks, California. What rank, gentlemen, did these men hold in the Continental Army and Navy? The first, a great citizen of this community, Paul Revere. What rank did he hold in the Continental Army? I think we should know that.
He was a painter, wasn't he? Didn't he paint?
He was a silversmith.
Silversmith.
An engraver.
He was
very
a
good. Pardon?
Captain.
That's a guess, isn't it?
It's safe.
No, I think you better advance him a bit. Mr. Adams, what do you think he was? Paul Revere was a what?
Major Revere.
He was a lieutenant colonel of artillery. That gives us one wrong. Now, how about Benedict Arnold? Benedict Arnold held what rank, Mr. Lodge?
He was a general.
He was. He was a major general. And William Prescott, not unknown to this audience, William Prescott held what rank? And who was William Prescott? Mr.
Somebody
Kieran?
From Concord.
Pardon? He comes from these parts. Mr. Kieran, do you...
Well, I know. He was one of the soldiers in the Revolution, one of the leaders. I don't know that he was a general. I think might have been a colonel.
He was. Which one do you say he was?
I think he was a colonel.
Yes, I think I almost dumped that in your lap, Mr. Kieran. He was. He was a colonel. And, of course, the famous battle with which his name is connected, among other patriot heroes, is the Battle of Bunker Hill.
Bunker Hill.
You're quite right.
Bunker's Hill.
Bunker's Hill? Doesn't anyone ever say, how about that, Mr. Lodge?
As a matter of fact, it was Breed's Hill.
I wish we had time to go into it. How about this one from Ronald C. Gillis, Jr. of Los Angeles, California? Now, you're going to hear three bugle calls, gentlemen. They're sounded each morning at a United States Army post or garrison, but they're going to be played in the wrong order. After you've heard them played, one after the other, straighten the bugler out. Tell him what order they should be played in. Let's have the three, one after the other. We have one old soldier here. We have two old soldiers. So we have Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran. Why don't you get together on it, boys? Mr. Kieran, start us off.
I think Frank had better leave that to me. I answered, Morton. He was an officer. I was a soldier. Why, the
you
last...
Ted.
The last one he played should have been played first. That was first call.
That's right.
The one he played first should have been played second. That was Reveille. And the one that he played second should have been played third. That was assembly.
Well, now, I may be missing
four. No, mess call.
No. Mr.
Call
Lodge?
Call in, assembly, anything you want to call it.
Isn't assembly played second and then reveille?
Oh, no, they don't assemble in bed and out in our army.
My information, which was given me, presumably by a naval man, tells me assembly and then reveille, but obviously, Mr. Kieran, you're right and I'm wrong. Very good. Now, how about this one from Mary Boylan of Rochester, New York? Who was terrified by the following objects? The first object is a hat box. Someone terrified by a hat box. Mr. Levant.
It took her a long time to get terrified. It was, what's the name of that picture? With Robert Montgomery, the night.
Go ahead. You're doing fine.
Go ahead. MGM produced it. I'll tell you the whole story.
No.
By
You've
night.
Got the right.
Emlyn Williams wrote it.
The Night Must Fall.
Night Must Fall.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, it was the hat box that terrified the girl.
Well, there was a decapitated head in that box.
That's right. It's usually the hat alone that terrifies the man. Okay. How about one who was terrified by a glass of milk? A glass of milk. Mr. Levant again.
Joan Fontaine. I wish I could have helped her out. In suspicion. Cary Grant, she thinks, is putting poison in her milk. He brings it up to her bed. But she drinks it and she doesn't die. I think in the book she dies.
Boy, can you tell a story? That's right.
What do you want for a glass of milk?
Exactly right. Now, how about someone who is terrified by a rod that turns into a snake? Mr. Kieran.
Old Pharaoh.
Old Pharaoh. What's the story, Mr. Kieran?
That was Moses and his brother, Aaron.
Aaron.
And they wanted to put the fear of the Lord into him, so... I've forgotten whether Moses ordered Aaron to cast down his rod, but anyhow, the rod was cast down and turned into snakes, and that put the fear of the Lord into Pharaoh.
That's right. Thank
Known
you.
As Passing a Miracle by Roark Bradford.
Well, that's the version that you may know, Mr. Adams. There's an older version that Mr. Kieran knows from the Old Testament. Well, that gives us three terrors out of three and sends us on to a question from Mrs. J.W. Stewart of Lexington, Kentucky. Mrs. Stewart wants you to name a relative of yours who fits into each of these classifications. Now, we have to get all on this. The first classification is lineal classification. Now, who would that be?
My father.
Mr. Lodge?
Your father, your grandfather, great-grandfather.
Yes, or going the other way.
My son.
Yes. In your case, your son?
My son, in my case.
Yes, several sons. That's right. Or, of course, a daughter, Mr. Levant. I don't want to leave you out of this.
I don't want to... go ahead. It's direct descendant. That's all you want.
A direct descendant, yes. Now, what does the classification sibling mean? S-I-B-L-I-N-G. Sibling. Mr. Adams.
Relativing.
I beg your pardon?
Sib's kin or relative.
Yes, but the sibling has a specific meaning. Mr. Kieran?
It sounds as though it might have something to do with twins.
No. It's simply...
That's twibbling.
Sibling is a very useful word, as a matter of fact. It ought to come into more common use. It means brother or sister having the same parents. Now, instead of saying brother or sister, you can say sibling and you can save money on a telegram blank, Mr. Adams.
if necessary. And how about
there's a tire by that name, too, isn't there?
Pardon?
Sibling Tires?
How about collateral? Collateral, Mr. Kieran?
Well, collateral would be through your mother's father, your mother's brother, or your father's brother, that is a cousin, uncle, and so forth.
Yes,
so on.
Descended cousin, descended from a common ancestor, but not having the same parent. But we missed on sibling, and that sends a $50 war bond to Mrs. Stewart and a set of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike. And now, before we go on to the next question, Mr. Risedale says a good way to describe things that are alike is just to say as much alike as two lucky strikes.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen. And as a matter of fact, I can show you just how true that is. Let me take this unopened package of Luckies and tear off a part of the top. Now I can see 6, 7, 8, 9 cigarettes. So round, so firm, so fully packed. The other 11 are covered by the rest of the package top. Now I pick out the first cigarette and the 9th cigarette and look at both. Now I shift them about in my hand and look at them again. And now I actually can't tell which cigarette was number 1 and which was number 9. For truly, one Lucky Strike cigarette is just like another. The 9th, the 20th, the millionth. They not only look alike, they are alike. Yes, smokers, you will find each Lucky Strike you smoke a cigarette of fine tobacco, so round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Thank you, Mr. Risedale. And now a question from Jerome Schrader of New York City. If these people, gentlemen, drawn neither from fiction or from real life, were baseball fans, which major league team would they probably dislike? I'll give you an example. Anthony Comstock would dislike what team?
Brooklyn.
Why?
They were a little on the profane side.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I was just thinking of the cards because he was opposed to gambling. But that gives you an idea of what the answer might be.
He was against profanity, too.
Yes, he was. That's right. We must say a good word.
He was
for
a good
him.
Boy.
He was a very good boy. Well, that was just an example. Now, what major league team would Little Black Sambo dislike? Little Black Sambo.
Oh, I got that. The Tigers.
The Detroit Tigers. Yeah. Yes. The Detroit Tigers. Now, what major league team would Peter Pan dislike? Peter Pan.
Is there a team called the Fairies?
No.
Well, it's all about fairies.
It is. Mr. Levant, Mr. Kieran?
Well, how about the Giants?
I don't think there are any Giants in the life of Peter Pan, as far as I know.
Well, he was a little fella. He never grew up.
The Angels?
No.
That's in Los Angeles. I'm not making that up.
No, wouldn't he dislike the Pittsburgh Pirates? Weren't they a pirate?
Take it easy. That's my hometown.
I think the Pittsburgh Pirates, well, there was a pirate in Peter Pan that was his natural enemy. That gives us one wrong. And now here's another and final character. This gentleman is not from real life, not from fiction, rather, but he is from real life and will shortly be taken from real life and belong to history. I refer to Adolf Hitler. What major league team or teams, perhaps, would Hitler dislike? Mr. Lodge.
Yankees.
He would dislike the Yankees, by gosh.
The whole American League.
Right, and there's one more team he might dislike, particularly at the present moment. Mr. Kieran.
The Reds.
You bet, the Reds, yes. The Reds and the Yankees. Well, we lost one on that. That sends a $50 war bond to Jerome Schrader and a set of the Britannica. And how about this question from Dorothy Arnold of New York City? What is the gift referred to in these lines? The first is, it blesseth him that gives. What gift is that? It blesseth him that gives, Mr. Kieran.
The quality of mercy, which is not strained.
Yes, that's the quotation is from?
It's from The Merchant of Venice by W. Shakespeare.
Yes. I bet you could give us another line or two, do you suppose?
Quality it droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven.
Upon the earth beneath, it is twice blessed. Blessed him that gives and him that receives.
And so on. If we had another half hour, we could just go on listening to Mr. Kieran all night. Now, here's another line about a gift. Oh, wad some power the gifty geas, Mr. Adams.
Our burns, to yes. See ourselves as ithers see us.
Yes, that's quite right.
How I admire your scotch.
And how about this one? Before the beginning of years, there came to the making of man... Mr. Kieran?
That's from Algernon and Charles Swinburne. Time with a gift of tears, grief with a glass that ran, is that it?
That's the one, yes. What poem is it from?
The name of that is called Anima Incepsa.
Atalanta in Caledon, I think it's from.
Oh, but yes, that's one of the choruses.
I think you're quite right. It's one of the choruses from it. That's exactly right. Well, that's all we have time for. Thank you, Senator Lodge, for being with us tonight. In a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guests. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out two sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica and two $50 war bonds. And speaking of bonds, I should like now, with your permission, to read a telegram which we've just received, addressed to Dan Golenpohl, the producer of Information, Please. Quote, I should like to express my appreciation for the tour which you are beginning tonight. Every dollar the American people can lend to their government at this time will help keep our fighting men supplied with the equipment and weapons that they need. Your tour not only sets a fine patriotic example, but it should give direct encouragement to every man who wears the uniform of the United States, wherever he may be serving. Signed, Henry Morgenthau, Jr., Secretary of the Treasury. Now, next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be with us again, and as our guests, we announce the famous radio commentator William Shirer, author of Berlin Diary, and our old friend Christopher Morley, whose new novel, Thoroughfare, has just been published. Send letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Let that chant always remind you that Lucky Strike means fine tobacco, so round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw. That is why with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1. This program came to you from Symphony Hall in Boston. This is the National Broadcasting Company.